Welcome to another edition of the Star Blades podcast. I'm the sports editor at the Star, Chris Holt. And here, as usual, with me, learning the words to this Star Spangled Banner, it's the Sheffield United reporter, James Shield. James, it's never quiet on a Sheffield United beat, but we have got an awful lot to get through here today, don't we, in a short period of time. So we're going to crack on. We'll get on to arguably the biggest news of the week in a moment, but we're just going to look back first of all at last week and the two games in quick succession over the Easter bank holiday weekend, which fair to say, fairly disappointing considering the form that Sheffield United were in going into them and probably the level of the teams that they were playing. I know we talk about no easy games in the Championship, but certainly there's two matches that you were looking to get at least maybe 4 points from, and they've come away with one against Reading and Bristol City. So take a look at Reading first. Just all in all, a pretty disappointing display, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you don't want me to sing the Star Spangled Banner, by the way, Chris.
No, I only know the first line of it.
I'll put my hand there anyway. That's good. I've watched enough Super Bowls to know that's what you do. So, no, yeah, back to Reading. It was a desperately disappointing game, and it was a desperately disappointing start to what was a disappointing bank holiday weekend for Sheffield United. I thought during that game against Reading, I don't know about you, I thought they almost looked a little bit sort of paralysed by the occasion, the realisation about what is finally at stake, what is finally resting on these games. And that was unusual because if there's one thing that Sheffield United have got absolutely lashings of, it's experience. And many of those players who were out there on the pitch or were involved in the build-up to the game, in the dressing room, have been in these situations before. You know, lots of them are veterans of that 2019 promotion-winning squad under Chris Wilder. So to see them struggle so badly against Reading was hugely, hugely worrying at the time, because they're going to find themselves in exactly the same situation in every single game between now and the end of the season. I thought, without going into it, because we'll get on to that next, there were signs of real improvement against Bristol City, although the result wasn't what either Paul Heckingbottom, his staff, the players or the fans would have wanted. But that's something that Sheffield United are going to have to do, I think, show a little bit more personality in games. And you're absolutely right. I know people trot out this line about there being no easy game in the Championship. What I will say is, and I understand it's easy for me to say this sat here, not being out there involved, not having all of that sort of pressure and expectation on my shoulders. But it's fair to say there are easier games than others. And a game against Reading, who at the time were one place above the relegation zone, you would rather be facing them than, say, Fulham or Bournemouth or Huddersfield or a team at the top of the table, because as the rankings prove, they're not as good.
Yeah. And they weren't that good. I mean, obviously you haven't seen much of Reading, but there were no great shakes themselves either. It wasn't, they probably played a lot better than they had done for most of the season, but that's a very low bar, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think all credit to Reading. They came, they obviously had a game plan that Paul Ince had worked on to try and exploit some of the weaknesses in Sheffield United's armoury. And every squad, every game plan has got a weakness that opponents can get at. And Reading did that really, really well. And they have improved, clearly, under Paul Ince. But they're not as good a team as Sheffield United. There might be some Reading fans screaming at the screen as I'm saying this, but I'm sorry, the league table shows they're not as good a side as Sheffield United. So Sheffield United should have won that game, as far as I'm concerned.
It reminded me a little bit of, if you remember back to that promotion season under Chris Wilder, there was a game, I think it was against Bristol City, where they'd been on great form, and then all of a sudden they just had, I don't know whether there was a kind of dawning realization of something might happen here, and that a really bad off day. And on that occasion, the attacking sense that they had completely went from them. The wing backs weren't getting forward at the time, the centre halves weren't getting forward the way they had been. And there was a little bit of that on Friday, because we saw Enda Stevens really seemed really reluctant to hit the byline the way he often does. George Baldock was getting a bit frustrated because things weren't going quite so well for him on the other side. And there was just a complete, I wouldn't say disarray, but there's just no fluency in it, and nobody wanted to take. I will get onto this in a minute, because he is so important. But there was nobody there to take responsibility and grab the game by the scruff of the neck. And of course, Billy Sharp would have been the man to do that. Mm-hmm. And moving on then to the next game, I think it was fair to say that Billy was the one major. The one major thing that was missing from Sheffield United's team, because as you say, there were noticeable improvements in the performance against Bristol City, but they just didn't have anybody finishing things off whenever they did actually create those chances.
Wonderful seamless link there, by the way, Chris. Yes. Into the, yeah, you've done this before, haven't you? It's yeah, you're absolutely right. I think it's fair to say, and you have to try and put this into some sort of context, United's players, they're not operating in a vacuum, and they are human. So there will be occasions, especially at such a critical point of a season, when things do get on top of them a little bit without getting too scientific. And it's how you respond to that. It's how you react to that. There's other teams in the division that are chasing what I think now is the final playoff spot remaining. I think three of those four positions are probably taken now. So you can see there's other teams, Blackburn, Middlesbrough, for example, are struggling to deal with that situation as well. But yeah, you're right. Moving it on to Bristol City, I think there's been a real theme developing since the international break. Thought some of Sheffield United's approach play down at Ashton Gate was actually quite elegant in a way. I thought they moved the ball around really well. They should have been probably two goals to the good by the time the half-time interval came up. But, of course, they weren't. And it is this common theme ever since Billy Sharp has been out of the squad that there was either nobody in the box when some of that good approach play edged Sheffield United further upfield. You saw that on several occasions at Ashton Gate. Because Morgan Gibbs-White and Illiman and Dyee, two wonderful players, two players who I really enjoy watching, and I think most other people watching this podcast, or is it a vlog cast? I don't know if it's on. It's
no,
on.
We'll call it the podcast for now.
Yeah. I'm sure they enjoy watching them as well. They're really delightful, really inventive, really creative players. But they're not out-and-out strikers, either of them. And you often saw them sort of hanging around on the edge of the box. I know Morgan Gibbs-White eventually got Sheffield United back into the game and ensured they took something from the match after they'd sort of predictably fallen behind after missing so many chances. But they do need Billy Sharp out there. It's good news that hopefully he'll be in the side, or the squad at least. And we'll probably touch on that in a moment as well, against Cardiff City this weekend. But it's been such a common theme. It's almost been at times rinse and repeat when Paul Heckingbottom has been speaking to the media after a game. Missed chances. It's become like a little bit of a mantra for him. And I can remember writing, actually, during the build-up to this game, in a sense, there's probably three players who have emerged from this bank holiday period, or maybe the couple of games leading up to that as well, since the international break, with their reputations enhanced. Morgan Gibbs-White, because he just keeps doing what Morgan Gibbs-White does. Philippe Yerimovic, who I know didn't play down at Bristol, but I think has done exceptionally well. The third player hasn't actually kicked a ball since the international break, and that's Billy Sharp.
Yeah, because Billy's got better for every game that he hasn't been playing.
Absolutely. And do you know what? It's not in a sense. I always remember, well, it was Richard Creswell. I'm sure he won't mind me saying that. But once saying, and he made the comment after he left Sheffield United, a club that he dearly loved his time at, and I think became far more attached to than he ever perhaps thought he would, having obviously been at Sheffield Wednesday. And it's the club in Sheffield that I think Richard now really identifies with. But he did make the point once, all those years ago, I never realised what a good player I was until I left. And you know exactly the point he was trying to make.
Yeah.
I think it's slightly different in Billy Sharp's case, but he might be 36. He might be in the, if you ask Billy, the autumn of his career. But I tell you what, Sheffield United's performances and results since he's been out of the side, if there was any doubt about just how important he is to this football club, not only off the pitch, but on it still, I think those doubts have now just been blown away. They need him back.
Well, given that I was coming up with absolutely superb links there a minute ago, I'm going to change our running order and we'll go on to Billy then, because it was revealed today that finally agreement has been reached between the two parties. We say agreement, it's a bit of a strange one because Sheffield United have now triggered their option on a new deal, but we know that there have been negotiations behind the scenes with regards to Billy's extension of his contract, which, as I say, was revealed today. So he's at the very least going to be here for another year. And crucially, as we spoke about off-air earlier on today, one of the things that, and he said it the last time that he signed a contract as well, is going to be working hard to make sure that this isn't his last one. And you just know that will be the case with Billy.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good news. Paul Heckingbottom has been fighting a losing battle, really. And the club, in a sense, has been fighting a little bit of a losing battle, trying to pretend that, you know, this contract situation with Billy and a number of other key players isn't an issue. It is an issue because people are talking about it. And I can remember towards the end of his period in caretaker charge last season, Paul Heckingbottom making the point that there's one thing that isn't good for a football club, and that is uncertainty. Well, until this moment, of course, it was always uncertain where Billy Sharp's future, immediate future lies. That now we know is at Sheffield United. Billy Sharp has made it absolutely clear all the way through the process that he never wanted to leave, that he wants to finish his career at the football club that he grew up supporting and has represented with such distinction. I think it's probably fair to say that perhaps during some of those negotiations, Sheffield United, as they will do, have exploited that desire and taken advantage of that, perhaps, dare I say, a little bit. But as I say, that's what a football club will do. There's always two sides to any negotiation. But the thing that always makes me smile when you speak to Billy is, as we said, he turned 36 in February. And he knows that. He knows he's probably approaching the end of his career. But he doesn't see this as the final knock-ins. And you always get that impression when you speak to Billy. Like I say, he's a very intelligent footballer. He's adjusted his game to reflect his advancing years. Although I must admit, I still quite fancy being 36. but you always get the impression that when Billy talks about his own career and about what he's doing, that in his eye, he still sort of sees himself as a 28-year-old at the peak of his career. And I think if you ask Billy now, he'd probably tell you, listen, I can go on and do what Phil Jagielka's doing and still be playing when I'm 40. Whether or not he can, who knows? But sometimes I think what's going on in a player's mind is so, so important. And Billy's clearly still got that drive. He's still got that intensity about how he approaches and about how he views his football. That can only be good news for Sheffield United. And I think that can only be good news for Billy Sharp's career as well, because as long as he's got that intensity, as long as he's got that motivation to continue improving and continue contributing, then I'm sure that's exactly what he'll carry on doing.
And he'll be written off again, won't he? Really?
Every single season, isn't it? You're right. Yeah. This is the season that Billy will finally fade. And you know what? Of course, that time will eventually come. Billy's said that to ourselves in a couple of interviews recently. He said, I will know when it's time to give up. But I think the one good thing that Billy's got going for him is, listen, he's not slow. Despite what people say, he's not a slow player. He is very explosive still. But all the way through his career, the most pace Billy has got is actually up there in his head. He thinks very, very quickly. He anticipates situations. He sees things unfolding on a football pitch far, far quicker than an awful lot of other players do. And I think that's something that will enable him to carry on perhaps a little bit longer than many other forwards, because he's not a battering ram. So he's not someone who can probably just, you know, put on a few pounds and get away with turning himself into some sort of target man or as I say, sort of sledgehammer up front. He's a very different type of player to that, but he's a very intelligent, very cute footballer. And I think because he's not as reliant on pace as perhaps a lot of other strikers are, I think that's going to be a real benefit for him going forward as well. And it should give him even greater longevity.
Well, it's true, particularly if Sheffield United continue to play in tactically the way they have been, and it looks as though, you know, certainly that has been the case this season, that the Paul Heckenbottom is just surrounding Billy with runners and allowing them to do all the, you know, the quick work and get the ball to him so that he can do what he does best in around the 6-yard box.
It's good management as well. It's good management, because I think you're seeing it with some players in the Premier League now. They have to adapt to how a team plays, but also a team, if you've got a star in the side, and if you've got someone that you want to get the best out of them, you've got to provide them with a platform. You've got to create the right environment for them to do that. It's something that I've droned on about far, far too many times, so I won't do it again. But I always say this is why Sheffield United, in terms of goals, aren't seeing the best out of Ollie McBurnie, because nobody will convince me that Ollie McBurnie is a target man.
Yeah.
But that nonetheless, that's effectively what he's been asked to do at Sheffield United. So I think, you know, all credit to Paul Heckenbottom for that. He's created that environment that makes sure that Billy is continuing to, you know, to perform as he is. And I tell you what, if he is fit tomorrow for the game against Cardiff City, which we're led to believe is returned to full training this week, I actually think it's reached a point now where I know Paul Heckenbottom was sort of hinting at the fact that he doesn't think Billy can probably last 90 minutes at the moment, because he wants to ease him back a little bit after suffering this hamstring problem that he's had. And I get that. It's the type of injury that you don't want to put too much load on a player too soon. You do want to just ease them back into it a little bit. But I would actually go the other way around. Rather than bring Billy on towards the end of the game, when Sheffield United might, you know, they could well be chasing it at that point, I would actually start him.
Yeah, I agree.
Him off later in the game if he is fit. He's so important to them.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, one of Billy's, and he's garnered this himself, one of Billy's biggest strengths is his own reputation, because as you say, you touched on earlier with how he's adapted his game, we've seen him drifting wide a little bit more this season. And what that does is, obviously, because defenders are so afraid of him and know what it is that he can do, they're just drawn to him like a magnet. And so when he's drifting wide, all of a sudden there's so many gaps left in the middle because he's pulling players out of position, which, you know, they're not really expecting to. So basically, you'll have managers saying, right, you big, ugly centre-half, stick with Billy Sharp and he's your man all day. And all of a sudden, Billy's Billy's coming out wide on the left-hand side, and there's huge swathes of space in the middle of the box for somebody like Illiman or Morgan Gibbs-White to run into, or indeed one of the midfielders like John Fleck or Norwood. So, yeah, that, like I say, his reputation and what he's built up has become almost mythological in a sense.
And the acid test of that is that even if Billy's only 70-80% of what he can be and what he was before the international break at this point in time, if you said to Steve Morrison, the Cardiff City manager, or the Cardiff City defenders ahead of this game, if we could get them on this podcast and say, right, you know, you've got to be honest, how exactly do you feel about this? If you asked them, would you rather see Billy Sharp on the bench or in the starting 11? Listen, we all know what the answer is. Every single one of those Cardiff City players and the manager would say, we'd rather him be on the bench, thank you very much.
Yeah. Elaine Bray has commented in another seamless link of another player we'll move on to. Elaine says, need to get Bash sorted now, and we will move on to Chris Basham, because probably after Billy, arguably the second most popular player and certainly amongst the fan base is maybe fair to say. And he too is in a similar position that Billy was in up until Billy signed his contract, in that he too is his current contract is running out at the end of this season, and there's as yet no agreement has been reached with regards to that. So how important do you think it is that he too is brought in and has that signed?
Yeah, I think it's hugely important, because there's no guarantee that Yerimovic will remain at Bramall Lane. And Chris is in a sense, he's a similar type of player, and I mean this in terms of what he means to the football club, as Billy. He's not quite got Billy's iconic status, and I think even Chris would accept that. But he's a player who really clearly has made a sort of an emotional investment in the football club as well. And it was lovely. I can remember when United got promoted. It was actually quite touching, without sounding daft, to see a player, and this is Chris Basham, who there was something almost childlike about his sort of whole manner when Sheffield United went up, and he was saying he was collecting all the newspaper cuttings in a scrapbook and making sure that he had film and footage of everything that was going on, because he wanted it for this own sort of personal scrapbook that he's got. And this is why fans love him. This is why supporters love him, because they almost look at players like Chris Basham, who hasn't put sort of almost an invisible barrier between him and the fans. He does interact with them. He enjoys interacting with them. He understands how important they are to the football club. And there's a little bit in terms of the effort that he puts in where you think, you know what, that's what I'd be like if I was playing for my football club. Clearly, I wouldn't be like that, because I'd probably be hacking the ball out of play when I was trying to put a 5-yard pass together. But you understand what I mean in terms of the effort that a player is putting in. And Paul Heckingbottom, and we'll get onto this, I'm sure, again, very, very shortly, I think he's earned the right. He's shown that no matter what is happening above him at the football club, I think he's earned the right to have a really good crack at this job now. And Paul clearly wants to play with a back three. He's made that very, very clear. And Chris Basham is still fit. He's not ridiculously old. He's still got a good few years left in him yet. And he is still absolutely integral to the way that Sheffield United want to play, because he's a centre-half who is great going forward. There aren't many of those around in the game. And if Sheffield United want to keep the same dynamic, they want to keep playing in the same way, which Paul Heckingbottom has led us to believe that he does for the next couple of seasons. Listen, I don't care who's in charge of the football club, who owns the football club. Finding a centre-half who can do what Chris Basham does it's going to cost Sheffield United an awful lot more to go out and sign one of those in terms of a fee and, more importantly, wages than it's going to actually keep Chris Basham at the football club. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with Elaine. Sorry. Let's get that sorted now.
And moving on then. So the big news this week, apart from Billy Sharp being fit and ready to play for against Cardiff, the big news is that we learned earlier this week, first of all, via our columnist Alan Biggs, who intimated that there was rumblings of a takeover or potential takeover from an American businessman. That has since come out that that particular American businessman is Henry. Is it Maurice? Is that Henry Maurice?
I believe so. Yes. Yeah. I did check, and I've
never actually heard his name said out loud. I've only ever read it. So Henry Maurice, U.S. media. I think we could call him a tycoon. They're a tycoon in America. I think they're oligarchs if they're from elsewhere.
If this goes through, we're going to have to get issues like this sorted, aren't we?
I know. But yes, Henry Maurice has, from what we can gather, agreed certainly a fee to buy Sheffield United from the Prince, and we are now in a position where it's effectively at the hands of the EFL. Really, is that where we're at?
Yeah, that seems to be exactly where we're at. And I was just having we'll put something in the online and in the paper about this later on. But I'm just in the process of looking through the criteria that the EFL will want Mr. Maurice to be able to demonstrate in order for this proposed takeover to go through. And I can't see anything in there that he's likely to fail. So you would imagine that this could get done potentially pretty quickly, although there are obviously a number of other parties that have expressed an interest in the football club as well. I think it's fair to say that although Sheffield United haven't explicitly put the football club up for sale in terms of, almost putting an advert out there and publicly inviting bids, I think it's fair to say that it's been effectively up for sale, or certainly open for investment for some while now. And Mr. Maurice is obviously someone who wants to get involved in sport. He's developed links with a number of sort of sporting bodies in the United States. He was previously interested in trying to purchase Newcastle before the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund and the consortium that they lead managed to push through their takeover at St. James's Park. And I've been interested to sort of see some of the things that he was looking to do and wanted to do when he was looking at Newcastle. I know there were people around him saying he was very, very sort of impressed with the work that Fenway had done at Liverpool in terms of how they were sort of getting their recruitment together, how that was sort of being led by quite a data-driven approach, but also how they'd managed to turbocharge the academy there. And he was very, very big on sort of looking to potentially grow that Newcastle brand. Now, that's things that he'll be wanting to do at Sheffield United as well. And I think it's there's obvious attractions for him. Although Sheffield United are back in the Championship, those 2 years in the Premier League, particularly the first one when they sort of mounted a challenge for Europe and would have got there had it not been for the COVID pandemic, I'm absolutely sure of that. That's given the football club a profile. It's given someone who wants to work with that sort of brand image something to work with. I think that's fair to say. And the one aspect of Sheffield United that has consistently performed over the past 15, 20 years, probably outperformed the first team, I think it's fair to say, is their youth development programme, their academy, their ability to bring players through the system. And so there are clear attractions. I think there's I'm about to go all Brendan Rodgers again, but there's like a synergy almost there between the things that, that Mr. Maurice wants to see in a football club and the things that, that Sheffield United are very good at. I'm not being critical here. I think the club does need investment. We've already seen certain things happen in the transfer market that would suggest the football club, as it stands at the moment, perhaps doesn't have the money at its disposal to fully maximise its potential.
Yeah, it's hit a level, isn't it? It's basically what we've found now, that there's a ceiling there, and we've reached that ceiling. And if things are to move forward any further than that,
then... absolutely. And football clubs that listen, I mean, this is probably for another time, but obviously American sport operates on a very different model to sport in this country. And there is an argument about whether the English model in terms of how clubs are funded and how they spend their money, whether that should change. And there's arguments for and against that. I think there's some very good arguments sort of for that. When you look at what happens at other clubs in terms of how their financial situations deteriorate and can deteriorate really rapidly. But the point is, this is how, at this point in time, English football in particular operates. It doesn't operate in some sort of philosophical vacuum. And clubs that succeed in English football right now, by and large, are clubs that spend money and that invest in their first team or invest in things that help their first team. And even some of the clubs that are put forward as being exceptions to the rule, I'm thinking of Brentford, for example, spend huge amounts of money on something else. I mean, what goes on down there in West London is that rather than probably funneling it into transfer fees, they spend ridiculous amounts on what is clearly an exceptional recruitment program. But nonetheless, they are spending money. And that is something at this point in time, whether you think it's the right thing or the wrong thing, Sheffield United are going to have to do if they want to maximise their potential. And what they'll see as their potential is getting back into the Premier League and then staying there.
And of course, if Maurice has been so impressed by what he's already seen in the academy, and he's not alone there. Sheffield United's reputation for that is, you know, it's world renowned, really. And when you consider the high profile players that have come through that. If you look at what Sheffield United have been able to achieve from that, with, I wouldn't go as far to say with their hands tied behind their back, but the resources are completely inferior to many, many big clubs in England. Imagine what they could do with the expertise that they clearly have and with the talent pool that they've developed and will continue to develop. Imagine what they could do with just a little bit of investment, you know, to improve the academy and the facilities around the academy so that they can move up to that higher level. The possibilities are huge, really.
No, you're absolutely spot on. And I really hope, I'm personally not one of these, and I mean this on, this is no slight on Mr. Maurice or anybody else who's looking at the football club. You always want to see an owner. Sometimes I don't like how sort of owners come into clubs and are sort of completely fated and it's almost like bow down and kneel in front of them. I really hope that any new owner who takes over a football club is also respectful of the personality of that particular club and realises that, yeah, they are buying something that is hugely important to the community. It is a business, but it's unlike any other business. You know, I don't see 30,000 people turning up to the, well, they might do with the cost of living crisis now, but to the AGM of, you know, their sort of utility company, as it were. I don't see them getting so emotionally involved in the day-to-day running of the company that provides them with electricity. They do in football. So I hope anybody who comes in, and it does look as if Sheffield United are set for regime change, I do hope whoever comes in is really respectful of what they're buying, because as you've said, and that's just one of the reasons, the youth development programme, and I can say this as someone from outside of Sheffield who doesn't come from Sheffield, it's a wonderful institute for all its faults, and it does have its faults, and it does do things at times that desperately frustrates me, you, everybody else watching this. But it's a wonderful football club, Sheffield United. And you just hope that the people there and who make it such a wonderful football club are able to be given the best possible chance of maximising their potential, of really exploiting the skills and the intellect that they've got. Because as you've said, if we can get in a situation where that happens and they're not sort of hamstrung by financial issues all the time, and they're allowed to sort of make decisions, they're allowed to develop the football club, I think the sky's the limit.
We're running on a little bit this week, so we'll go very quickly to tomorrow's match against Cardiff. They're almost win now, really, aren't they, really?
Yeah, they are. I mean, listen, well, they might not be, because every team below them could drop points between now and the end of the season as well. But no, I think it's fair to say it's as close to a must-win game as you're going to get. Not only in terms of the league table, but I just think for sort of Sheffield United, I think for the emotional well-being, if you like, of the squad as well. They've had a little bit of a stumble over the bank holiday period. It's not the games that they would have wanted. I mean, it was interesting. Tells you something a little bit about what's going on elsewhere in the division. If you remember Paul Heckingbottom before the game against Reading on Good Friday saying that we'll know exactly what we need to do coming out of this block of two games. Well, the situation's actually changed very little, hasn't it?
I think we had said the same thing, and I said you're right in saying, you know, once we get over this bank holiday period, we'll have a very clear idea of where things are going to go. And we're none the wiser, really. Yeah.
But then, again, I get the argument that Cardiff City can play with a little bit more freedom than Sheffield United, but Cardiff City would rather be in Sheffield United's position. They'd rather have that extra sort of pressure on their shoulders. And I touched on this last week. Pressure isn't something that professional footballers, although we might position it as being slightly different than that at times, it's not something that a professional footballer is really scared of. It's something that they encourage. It's something that they welcome, because it means in this situation they're chasing something good, and this is what they want to do. So Sheffield United should be winning this game. I'm not saying they will, but they should be. And they know it as well. They will know that.
Okay, that's great, James. Thanks a lot. We'll be back again next week, where hopefully we're looking forward to a match against, we'll be a bit earlier next week. What day is it? Friday? Mm. They're playing next Friday, so we'll be here maybe next Wednesday or Thursday to look at the match against QPR, where hopefully we're talking about a Sheffield United win and closing in on nailing down that playoff place. Because if I'm honest, regardless of what's happening at Fulham or whether or not they're champions or whether what that is indeed they're chasing, I don't really want to be going into the final game of the season needing to beat Fulham. Didn't claim a playoff place. So fingers crossed we can get things done and dusted over the next two games and we don't have to worry about that, and everybody can just have a wee party at Bramall Lane on that final day in the sunshine. But there we have it. Thanks very much for joining us, everyone who has. Hopefully, we'll see you again next week. And as I say, hopefully, we're looking back on another win for Sheffield United and maybe even some movement on a proposed takeover. So thanks very much, and we'll see you again next week.